This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Elise Glink joins us to start the week Mondays. Hi, Elise. Welcome back.
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
Now, before we get to your stuff, let me just mention, because I said I would, some other strange things people collect. Our Mega Pros quiz in the next hour will be about collections. John, I collect barf bags from airplanes. Hi, John. I know a lawyer in Peoria that collects toilet seats. John, I collect out-of-print cyberpunk-inspired collectible card game called Android. John, my brother has a beautiful collection of old classic paint-by-numbers. That sounds fun. Some of those are really beautiful. Those can look nice. John, I have the large... We got to call this person, Pete. John, I have the largest collection of old and antique etiquette books in North America. That'd be the largest collection in North America. I think this person is something. And one more. John, I collect bottle brushes for the kitchen. I drive my wife nuts. We've been married 41 years. We're doing okay. All right. Well, I'm happy for that. So, Elise, do you collect anything, Elise?
I seem to collect things from family members who are cleaning out their houses who don't want them anymore. They
right.
seem to, and plenty of that seems to end up in my house.
Right. I mean, they don't want it anymore, but it's too important to throw away. Let's give it to Elise.
Yeah, family history. We have a big basement. Recipe for disaster.
The Employee Benefit Research Institute, and I've never heard of them, did a survey on what?
So every year for the last 32 years, they do a survey on how employees feel about their impending retirement. So do they feel they have enough money? Do they have what's standing in the way of having a comfortable retirement? How do they feel about Medicare? And the value of having this survey, the Employee Benefit Research Institute has actually been around a long time. It's very well established. And the benefit of having this longevity of the survey is you can kind of assess how people are doing over time and where we are today. And it's been a fairly accurate gauge of survey of people's nervousness about the economy, and then that translates into other issues going forward. So it's been very useful.
And what were the findings?
Well, it's interesting. Given everything with the pandemic, you might have expected people to be very nervous about retirement. And in fact, 70% or a little bit over that of workers are pretty confident about how their retirement prospects are going to be. And 80% think they're going to have enough money to live comfortably in retirement, which is a very high number.
I would imagine people are worried about their loss of equity, though, right? I mean, I'm surprised to hear this.
I know. I was, too. Although, to be fair, the survey was done before the Dow dropped 20%, I think, or at least most of it. And we are seeing the market down again today, continuing the April everybody wishes they could forget. But, you know, in the survey, it's interesting because there was a little bit of a difference between workers, people who are currently in the economy, currently at jobs, how they feel about retirement, which is very, very strong. But people who are already retired, they're feeling a little less confident.
Yeah, well, they don't have money still coming in. They are. I'll tell you what, we will talk later this week about people who decide to take Social Security before the maximum age date, and there is a robust debate out there, which our friend Terry Savage says is unilaterally ill-informed. But some people say, no, I'm not so sure I shouldn't start taking Social Security now. And I can see the desire to turn on the spigot. It's right there if you want some, right?
It is, but it's so much less. I completely agree with Terry on this point. It's so much less to start taking it at 62 versus at even your full retirement age, which for most people is either 66 and a half or 67. And you really do get a bump up of 8% per year just for waiting until you're 70. And that's just for a lot of people, that extra, you know, it'll be about 16%, 8%, and a little over that, 8%, 8% of that. Is a really good return on waiting those 2 years, if you can make it, if you're healthy, if you don't really need the money.
WGN, John Williams here with Elise Glink from Think Glink Media. Elise has been sharing with us the results of a survey done by the Employee Benefit Research Institute. It talks about how secure people feel about their retirement, be they in it or it pending. How are people handling debt? Are folks hacking away at their debt? Or are they upside down? What's the general thought there?
Well, it's not good. I mean, we know that debt, particularly credit card debt, is at all-time highs again, this after falling dramatically. People really deleveraged during the last 2 years of the pandemic, but it has crept back up again, and nearly half of workers say that debt is negatively impacting their ability to save. In fact, they're just spending a significant more amount of the money they would save for retirement in paying down their debt. And in fact, more so even than last year, 25% say debt has impacted their ability to live comfortably in retirement. What that says to me is that there are retirees who are overwhelmed with debt, a very significant amount of them, actually.
We asked our listeners in our non-scientific little news click, but it got a lot of responses last week about how inflation is impacting them. And only 18% said not very much. Most folks said a little bit, but many, about 20%, said significantly they're feeling the pinch of inflation. I don't suppose that surprises you.
It doesn't. And you know what else? We're starting to see the lines go up at food banks across the country, John. So when the pandemic first hit, I was actually volunteering up in Highwood at the food bank there. And the number of cars just went overnight from maybe, 50 to 100 per two-hour session to 300 to 500. And the kinds of cars that were going through were cars we'd never seen before. Mercedes and Jaguars and Range Rovers. You know, people were just, don't judge me, I know it looks bad, but this is my car and I suddenly don't have any money and I can't make my payments. And so that sort of debt, you know, car payment debt, credit card debt, for a lot of seniors, they have mortgage debt. And now that we've got mortgage rates over, you know, closing in on 6% in some cases, particularly if your credit score isn't that high, then you've got, and you've got home prices that have gone up so much. If you're a senior and you're looking to move, you may well have taken on some sort of a loan. Now you've got that debt to deal with. So it is a problem for many, many seniors.
There's another survey I wanted you to comment on, the HOUSE survey, H-O-U-Z-Z. What's that?
So HOUSE is a wonderful website where people post pictures of their home renovation and the things that they're doing, and you can get connected to different service providers, whether it's an architect or designer or painter or whatever, who can help you do the things you want to do in your house. And so they spend a lot of time looking at home renovation activity, and their economists do several surveys throughout the year. This is the House and Home Study, and a little play on words. And what they found is that when it comes to renovation activity, and how much people are spending, we're now seeing the highest rates of spend on home renovation since 2018, which, by the way, is also what the Harvard Center for Joint Housing Studies found. They also found that home renovation activity is basically off the charts just when we're having very significant, not only supply chain issues, but we're also having a shortage of the number of people who can do qualified work.
Yeah, that's the thing. Even if you can get countertops, find someone to stick them in. But so is this a continuation then of what happened early in the pandemic when everybody went home?
Well, I think it is, right? I mean, we've got more than half of homeowners renovated their homes to some extent in 2021, 55%. That was up from 53% in 2020. The home renovation spend is up 20% in the last year. People are spending a median $18,000 on all of their projects. But the higher end projects, you know, the, let's say, top 10% of spend, they saw an increase from $85,000 in 2020 to over $100,000 in 2021. So what would that be? It could be a bathroom and a kitchen remodel. It could just be a kitchen remodel. You could be adding on rooms. We have seen people add on to their square footage of new houses that they've bought, simply building offices and extra guest bedrooms. People want bigger houses and they want them renovated.
I just want to quote one stat here that I think you just mentioned. More than half of homeowners renovated their homes last year, 55%. That's, I don't know what it used to be, but that strikes me as amazing.
It's a very, very big number. And again, it comes at a time where people are having trouble getting the materials they need. There is a backlog of a year for some some kinds of windows that have to be delivered. You've got a backlog for people ordering appliances. We've got some friends who are about to do a big remodel of a house they bought 18 months ago at the start of the pandemic. And they showed us their garage yesterday, full of brand new appliances, and yet the windows for the house are backlogged about 8 months, and they still haven't started their project, which they thought they would be nearing completion on. Mm-hmm. They won't even start until June. And so that's been going on all over the country. We've seen shortages of garage doors, electrical outlet appliances, lighting fixtures. The list goes on and on.
Yeah, I don't know how much sympathy to have with some of these contractors, because I would advise them, if you're understaffed, we're going through some of this ourselves, and the people that come out do good work, and we really like them, but they don't come out all the time. And some weeks where they were going to come out, they don't come out a single day, and they say, well, something else popped up, and we just only have so many guys. So I think they're telling us the truth, but I wish they would tell us the truth on Monday, and then we wouldn't every day hope that they were going to show up, you know?
Yeah, it's a problem. Contractors are not, you would think they're very, very organized, and some of them are, and some of them are not. I do want to point out that one of the highlights of the house study is that people are financing these projects increasingly on credit cards. Now, I don't know if they're doing this to get the points or the rewards or the free tickets, but we are seeing an increase of spend on credit cards. And that's, unfortunate, but it's causing, the debt issues down the line as well.
Tom Fortino and Elise Glink do a show Sunday mornings here on WGN at 6:30 a.m. This Week in Wealth. And you can follow all the rest of her wisdom, Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves at thinkglink.com. Okay, Elise, we'll visit again next Monday.
It sounds good, John. Thank you.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch, Jim Dahlke joins us on Mondays. I'm interested in this live bash, Jim. Let's start there. What should we know about it?
Yeah, hey, John. So Live Bash, interesting new startup here in Chicago. Essentially what they've done is created software built on the blockchain that converts live performances into NFTs or digital collectibles for fans to buy. There's a lot going on here with Live Bash. It's built from a guy named John Hart, who spent about a decade at TD Ameritrade. So he is sort of bringing his fintech chops to the live entertainment space. What Live Bash does is they actually create these physical stages. They've got a stage that's under construction here in Chicago. They've got a lease in LA, looking for another space in Nashville. That's where they're going to start. And they're going to create these spaces for artists to perform these, raw live shows. No one in attendance. They're going to video it and kind of create these live experiences for fans to watch online and buy digital collectibles of the performance in real time. So essentially what you can do is you can watch a performance of an artist that you know, pay a few bucks, and now you leave that show with a digital collectible that in theory could gain value over time as an NFT. And you can trade it, you can hold it, and you can continue to collect them and have a portfolio of these digital collectibles over time. So a pretty ambitious startup. They raised $21 million last week, so it came out of stealth with quite a bit of funding. Definitely a significant funding round for a company just kind of getting off the ground. So a pretty ambitious company in Chicago out of Live Bash.
Yeah, and unique too. NFTs rather mystify me, but this one seems to make sense in that for the same reason you collect your ticket stubs or tickets to favorite concerts over the years, I guess this would be the digital equivalent of that, right?
That's right. And the founder was telling me that he thinks this can go even further beyond the entertainment space. You think about business conferences, people who want to buy, sections of business conference content, whether it be informational or motivational. They think there's an opportunity there. There's actually an opportunity too, he said, in the family space, at weddings and bar mitzvahs, where you're sort of contributing to the happy couple by buying an NFT of maybe the best man speech or of the first dance. So there's a lot of opportunity here, they think, and we'll see if there's a market for it.
To be clear, say you have an NFT of the best man's speech at Bob and Carol's wedding. The video, which everybody else has on their phone and which their hired videographer also has, is available to everybody else. You would not have exclusive control of the best man speech. You would just have the digital stamp of it, the collection, the collectible of it, right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, the wedding and the bar mitzvah element here is a little less of a, hey, this is going to gain value over time. More as like, hey, here's the sort of a unique, different way to, give the couple a few bucks heading into the married life.
Still, but that's true for any NFT, though, right? You don't control the use of it down the road. You have the NFT, you have the exclusive, the NFT, but you don't say it's of a baseball game or Mike Trout hitting a home run, and you want the NFT of that. You can get the NFT of Mike Trout's home run over the weekend. But MLB also has that. Mike Trout's got that. Everybody's got that video, right?
That's right. And so the difference being that, you know, the NFT sort of built on this blockchain software technology, in theory, you know, it will have a scarcity of that video. So it depends on kind of how it's presented and how it's delivered. But, in theory, if you have an NFT of that home run, they're going to mint only a select number of those, right? So there's only a handful of those videos that are going to be minted in NFTs. Therefore, it'll have some scarcity and could, you know, increase in value over time. I think we're still very, very early innings of this. No pun in baseball, pun intended here. But I do think a lot of industries are still sort of figuring this out. But, you know, you think about it from the live entertainment standpoint. Think about a band that's doing a reunion tour, a last show, right? Maybe you can get a digital collectible of, your favorite song from their last reunion tour show. Could be something that could gain in value over time.
Yeah, but that song would, I'm mad at you now. That song, Jim, would be available on YouTube. If you wanted to watch the replay, maybe MTV's going to do a docu about them or something. But I mean, you still don't have exclusive control of that content, right?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a great point, and I think that's a point that this entire industry is sort of working to grapple with, right? So it's like, you know, why do I want to get an NFT of this, Bored Ape cartoon when I could just sort of get a picture of it myself?
Well,
but what you're getting with that is the authenticity of it. So rather than just having like a copy of the video or a copy of the picture, what this NFT technology is saying is like, we authenticate that this is the real file, the one that we are minting, and that you have one of only a handful of number of these. So, the scarcity of the market is going to determine how valuable these things are and how, the market reacts to it. So I think this industry is still very, very early in figuring out exactly what the market demand is and if people are going to want to pay for an NFT of a song or a video from their favorite performer. But hey, this company believes got some money in the bank. It's got some stages it's building, and we'll see if they can kind of create a new market here.
Well, the idea that you have a stage and people can you would stream it, the NFT notwithstanding, I think that's a clever idea. Do they have any major acts that they have announced that will partner with them?
So they've got acts. They were not disclosed to me who they've got on board yet, but they're in discussions with performers. Some people in the music industry are also investors of theirs as well. Mm-hmm. A little tight-lipped at the moment, but yeah. So, the Chicago stage is expected to be live by the end of this year, followed by LA and Nashville. And they want to have a 24/7 streaming site, so that would mean performances and time zones all over the world. So they are looking international as well.
Not to get all meta on you, but if I had a pile of cash and set it on fire, I could do an NFT of that, and then it would sort of be a almost performance art representation of an NFT. Now, wouldn't it?
That sounds very Banksy of you when he ripped his painting up in front of everybody.
That's right. I was wondering if somebody had done what I just described, but that does sound very Banksy, doesn't it? Okay, there's a thank you for indulging me there. You also wrote about Food Rocket. There's also a story after COVID layoffs, some crafty pivots that have raised a lot of money. There's plenty of business writing besides this at chicagoeno.com. Jim Dahlke, thanks for saying hi today.
Thanks, John.
We had more in store, but that's my shiny object, and I don't seem to be able to resist, do I? It's 12:44 on WGN. More business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Chicago's business news of the day. At a time when demand for food assistance is climbing, the Greater Chicago Food Depository has announced plans for a nearly 37,000 square foot addition to its facility on the southwest side. The $53 million project will start this summer. Cranes reports the plan calls for a new commercial kitchen for preparation and packaging and a demonstration kitchen for nutritional education. The expansion is part of the organization's Nourish Project, addressing root causes of hunger and expanding the availability of healthy food in high-need areas. The facility is located in the 4100 block of Ann Lurie Place. McDonald's has reportedly resumed political contributions to Republican candidates who voted to overturn the 2020 election. The company had stopped those contributions after January 6th, saying it would ensure that all future contributions going forward would align with McDonald's values. In March of this year, McDonald's donated $12,000 to five Republicans who voted to overturn the election and $15,000 to the National Republican Congressional Committee supporting re-election of all Republicans who objected to the election results. During the 2020 election cycle, McDonald's Political Action Committee donated $504,000 to federal candidates, 63% of which went to Republicans. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Business of Food, and Steve Alexander.
Happy Monday, Mr. Williams.
Thanks,
happy National Beef Month as well. And what serendipity. It's National Barbecue Month, too, which we'll talk about in coming days. But today, we celebrate beef. And Josh St. Peters is the Executive Vice President of the Illinois Beef Association. Josh?
Yes, indeed.
But before that...
The summer of 2003, I interned at WGN. It's really a cool opportunity for an Illinois farm kid to get to hang out and learn from the best in the business.
Meaning the Big O, of course. Let's get this out of the way, if you don't mind, Josh. Was Orion mean to you?
No. I had the chance to work with Orion and Max and their producer Lottie and really enjoyed it. They were good people.
Oh, good, good. Let's move on to National Beef Month.
To me, it's the unofficial kickoff to summer with a lot of excitement and opportunity for everybody to be getting out their barbecue grills and smokers and putting their favorite cuts of beef out there.
And beef is not only what's for dinner, it's a big driver of the state's economy.
Oh, it's hundreds of millions of dollars a year. You know, agriculture is the number one industry in Illinois. We have about 18,000 family farms in Illinois that are producing cattle and a large, robust meat industry in our state, processing the beef into all the great meat cuts that we find at our local retail establishments and favorite restaurants.
And if you think the sky-high price of beef at restaurants and stores means farmers are getting rich, not so.
It's been a challenging time for the men and women feeding cattle for a variety of reasons, just a number of factors that are driving up the price of corn and soybeans, driving up the cost of fuel. It's a tough time to be feeding cattle on Illinois farms, but we're still optimistic that we'll continue to see a strength in what's being paid for those cattle in the months ahead to increase profitability towards the second half of this year.
Let's hope so. One more thing, Josh. Back to that time that you were interning for Orion here at WGN.
Yeah.
Did he allow you to make eye contact?
Oh, he did. He gave me so many opportunities. Extremely indebted to Orion for everything he gave me that summer.
It's National Truffle Day. That's the Business of Food and Orion on 720 WGN.
Talk about big business. U.S. construction spending. Amy Guth is where today?
Well, it is rising, but less than expected in March. So Reuters did some reporting on this and said that that it edged up about 0.1% after increasing 0.5% in February. So a lot of economists that had been polled by Reuters, they had forecast construction spending would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 0.7, kind of edging up to that 1%, especially because construction spending overall has increased 11.7% year over year in March. So they did expect that number to be a little bit bigger, but nonetheless, it is still rising. And then when you start to kind of break it up into pieces and sector, certainly residential construction is really a big part of that. A big, strong demand for housing, though momentum could slow as mortgage rates move forward.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, if we lose that, because I don't suppose people are building big office buildings these days, so you'd hope that residential would stem the tide. Interest rates go up, that could really impact that whole sector, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so a lot of non-residential structures, there was some decline reported there, declined about 1.2% in March. And spending on public construction projects fell 0.2% after it had already dipped about 0.1% in February. So we're seeing that kind of decline. Not a lot of people building offices, exactly as you said, things like that. But really that housing demand is driving that rise.
Ford is recalling some Explorer SUVs. Why?
Well, because they can roll away while they're in park. So this is a very important recall. So they are, it's about a quarter of a million Explorer SUVs made between 2020 and 2022. This does include 2020 and 2021 police hybrid vehicles. So people are going to start being notified by mail starting around June 6th. This will be, you know, if you are part of that recall, your the parts will be replaced at no charge by dealers. You can check in with Ford dealers prior to the to that June 6th date. But essentially, it's a bolt at the bottom. It's a couple of pieces at the bottom of the car that if they break, even if you put it in park, the car could roll away. So in the meantime, may want to put the parking brake on. They did, as part of that recall, they did say if the parking brake is on, it saves you from rolling away. But that seems like kind of a thing you would not want your car to do. So if you have an SUV, you may want to check in with the Ford dealer and certainly be looking at the mail starting June 6th.
Spirit Airlines is in the news. What's up there?
Yeah, so this is kind of part of a saga that's been going on for a while. So a while back, Frontier Airlines approached Spirit about acquiring it. And then JetBlue came in after Spirit agreed to be acquired by Frontier Airlines, which they are calling a merger. And the JetBlue offer was a little more financially lucrative, but ultimately Spirit has now rejected that, according to some reporting from CNN Business. And they also said part of that is they didn't even believe that regulators would allow JetBlue to buy Spirit. Here's what's interesting to me about this. If this goes through, already Spirit is the third largest carrier at O'Hare. They have about 4% of total passengers. United and American are the biggies there. They both have almost 40%, about 35-40% of passengers there, according to Department of Transportation data. But to merge these two, to see Spirit and Frontier be acquired, or, you know, to be merged, would suddenly make a really big move, especially when we've seen leisure travel come back and rebound a lot faster than business and international travel. So I think that will be a really important deal to watch. Should that go through, suddenly we have a much larger budget carrier that specifically is catering to leisure travelers, and it already has a pretty big stake in O'Hare.
Update us on PayPal.
Yeah. So PayPal, you know, of course, they do a lot of B2B business. It's not just the way we can use it to check out with e-commerce, things like that. But they've formed a partnership with Aon to offer small business customers the ability to shop for and manage insurance policies. So if you're a small business owner, keeping your workers insured is probably a lot of paperwork and a lot of stuff you have to wade through. And this would digitize a lot of that. So Aon has a product called Cover Wallet, which is a small business insurance product. And this will be part of PayPal's digital offering now. They said that in a joint statement between the two companies earlier today.
Wish we had more time. We'll talk again later in the week. Thanks for the updates.
Thanks so much, John.
That's Amy Guth.